Hello and welcome to another episode of the Clarion Cost podcast. My name is Eleanor Hunter and I am an associate in the Cost team, and I am joined today by Andrew McCauley, who is the partner of our Cost team. And today we're going to be discussing LASPO and the 10-year anniversary. As of last month, it's been 10 years since the implementation of LASPO, and I wasn't quite around at the time. I was 15 and still in high school, but I think you were around in the cost world at the time, weren't you, Andrew?
Yes, I was 13. You're making me feel really old now to say you were 15 at the time. But yes, I was around and remember it really, really well.
And what were the feelings at the time when all this was coming out of the woodwork? What was going to happen?
Yeah, so in advance of LASPO happening, there were two reports that Lord Justice Jackson issued, and his final report was the final recommendations, and a lot of negativity in the profession. Lots of people saying that was the end of the world for the PI market, end of the world for the cost lawyer market, litigation funding, access to justice would be really squeezed. So ahead of the review, lots and lots and lots of negativity. Effectively, lawyers saying they were going to have to work potentially harder for less reward.
Yeah,
that really did cause a lot of panic and worry.
And it's funny you should say that, because like I say, I wasn't around when these introductions were coming in, but that all sounds very familiar to what we're going through at the moment, with the extension of fixed recoverable costs, with the change in QUOCS rules, and it seems to be the theme at the moment that there's still the panic. There's still, you know, people saying that, oh, it's going to kill our profession and things like that. But it kind of goes to show that we're 10 years on from LASPO. That panic was there then. We're all still here.
Yeah. And actually, lawyers and law firms are very resilient.
Yes.
We all don't like change, like in any sector. Mm. You get comfortable something, you learn it, you get good at it. And when there's changes, you have to learn again.
Yeah.
But as a profession, everyone reacted to it really, really well, has embraced it, might not have liked it at the start, but to now we've got relatively comfortable with it and are practising in the areas what we changed and doing okay.
Well, I guess, like you say, we should probably list the major recommendations. So LASPO implemented several of the recommendations in Lord Justice Jackson's final report, as you mentioned, in 2010, and his major recommendations were the introduction of damages-based agreements, success fees and ATE insurance premiums cease to be recoverable inter party, success fees be capped at 25% of damages, exclusion, of course, the damages for future care or losses, referral fees not be permitted, the introduction of qualified one-way cost shifting, fixed costs in fast-track litigation be expanded, cost management, and a new format for a bill of costs.
Yes.
So LASPO, like I say, implemented several of those, but notably the success fees and insurance premiums not being recoverable inter party, with some exceptions, for example, diffuse mesothelioma claims.
Yes.
So like you say, there was the panic originally, and how do you think it's all panned out in the end? So I guess specifically cost management, the new bill of costs, the 25% success fee cap and DBAs, how have they changed the world of costs?
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so in terms of cost management, and correct if I'm wrong, I think our colleagues Anna Lockyer and Dan Murray have done a podcast recently.
They have. I'll link that onto this blog page and then anyone can refer back to that.
Brilliant.
One. It was an in-depth look into the past 10 years of budgeting, which is really helpful.
Yeah. So I'll just give a quick snapshot now. For anyone wants some more detail, they can listen to Anna and Dan's podcast. So in terms of cost management, that was the proposal what received the most negativity from memory. That was lawyers saying, how possibly can I project forward what we may spend? Litigation has so many variables.
Yeah.
And cost lawyers essentially saying that's the end of the market for us. If everything's going to be cost managed, then there's no detailed assessment and lawyers will not use cost lawyers for cost management work.
Yeah.
So it's the area of the most negativity. And actually what Law Justice Jackson said in 2015 at one of his lectures, so obviously he got a lot of criticism for the review in particular cost management, but what he said in one of his lectures was, within 10 years, cost management will be accepted as an entirely normal discipline. And people will wonder what all the fuss was about. What all the fuss was about.
And do you think that's true?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. I think that cost management has fully bedded in now.
Yeah.
And obviously there were teething problems at the start. And like we said earlier, people don't like change.
Yeah.
But I think this change was really positive because it brought more transparency and more upfront conversations about costs with clients and sharing those, that transparency with the opponent.
Absolutely.
No surprises at the end. So really, really positive. But yes, it was difficult at the start. Everyone was learning something new. You know, I remember the first time I went to a costs and case management hearing. I'd not done one before. You were new to it. You were learning. But actually, the fear of doing that now is not there.
No.
And you get used to it. So I think cost management, Law Justice Jackson was right, the fuss has disappeared. And actually, if you look at the recent Civil Justice Council review of costs, actually the feedback in it is probably cost management is working and don't remove it.
Yeah, because they've just had the review that's been...
Correct.
Published, haven't they? And
yeah,
there was some concern that it'd be scrapped or that defendants wouldn't have to do them if quacks applied in cases, and
exactly,
there was a lot of uncertainty. But like you say, it's probably reassuring to Lord Justice Jackson to see that it has gone so well over the past 10 years and people are so supportive now of the cost budgeting system.
Exactly. And I had the pleasure about 18 months ago of doing a podcast with Dominic Reagan and Law Justice Jackson, talking about LASPO, and who knows, Law Justice Jackson might listen to this through Dominic, but I'm sure I'll be smiling if he listens to this, because you know those words of people wonder what all the fuss was about.
Actually, right.
That's come true with the recent Civil Justice Council review, because in there people are saying, please don't remove it.
Yeah,
it works. So I think that's been a really positive change in the long run.
Yes.
Initially, it was tough and lots of negativity and learning on the job. But actually, it's forced solicitors to have upfront conversations with clients about fees.
Yes.
And I know cost lawyers have really developed new skills and can help project manage litigation better than ever.
Yeah, because like you've highlighted there, I think people sometimes will look at cost budgeting as only an inter-party exercise, but it's actually a really helpful exercise for you to start the conversation with your client about costs and about shortfalls, rather than waiting to the end and then there being the big shock to the client.
Yes.
of the shortfall. You can use the cost budgeting process to keep your client informed and to prevent those challenges at the end that seem to be becoming more prevalent in recent years.
Exactly. And I mean, you'll know, Eleanor, but lots of our clients instruct us at a pre-action stage to prepare a solicitor on client budget.
Mm.
And then if proceeds are issued, we'll customise that budget into an inter-parties budget.
Yeah.
And that really works well for large projects where there's going to be monthly invoicing at big sums, because the client can budget.
Yeah.
And the law firm can get some visibility on capacity levels and what they'll need to run the project. So it's got a dual purpose in my mind at every point. And even if you don't do that strong client budget at the outset, you should be, you know, you should always you're giving the inter-parties budget to the client, taking them through it, talking about it, and using it to monitor your sister own client charge with the client.
Yes.
It brings it to the fore, as before, pre-cost management. Yes, there was requirements to talk about costs with clients like there still are now, but there was no cost management. And often costs were left till the end. Inter-parties, the other side, got a big surprise. And often clients at the end weren't fully in the loop on costs. Now it makes costs prospective.
Yes.
Rather than historically they were retrospective.
Yes.
And that's the big change, prospective instead of retrospective.
Yeah, it's become much more modular than a linear process. Yes. where costs are just deemed as, well, that's the cost lawyer's job after the case has been settled, and not something that needs to be considered throughout.
Correct.
The proceedings.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So in terms of the new bill of costs, so new anymore, but the electronic bill of costs.
Yeah, so that's been a positive development, and essentially that produces more granular information. It's electronic, it's self-calculating, hopefully no printing of paper. Big step forward. And one thing I know we were proud of through Clarion was both myself and Stephanie Kerr worked on the copy bill committee.
Yes.
Producing the bill for court protection work. And in terms of court protection, well, that's been brilliant, because now actually you can have essentially an electronic process for assessment of the costs, rather than historically lots of paper, lots of filing things at court, lots of relying on the DX and the post.
Just
and
an outdated process,
correct,
wasn't it?
Yeah, correct, yeah. So I think new format bill was always going to be a good idea.
Yeah.
The only negative about it, but actually the courts, particularly the senior courts cost office, were really good on this, which was, look, it took longer to prepare those bills at first because people hadn't done them before and they were new. But actually, they've settled down now. People draft them regularly, getting quicker and more efficient. And I think it's just an accepted form of the cost process now.
And like you say, working on the committee is always helpful.
Yes.
For us to know what we're doing from the start.
Definitely, and provide feedback and ultimately bring positive change for assessments in cot work.
Yes, absolutely. So turning to the more funding issues, so the 25% success fee, cap, DBAs.
Yes, yeah.
How do you think that's all panned out, that they're not recoverable into party?
That was a huge concern. And essentially what's happened is you've got law firms who do charge a shortfall or the success fee, and you've got some law firms who essentially just charge what they get back into parties. So effectively a true CFA light. And there was lots of worry about access to justice, and those claims wouldn't be taken on, and they wouldn't be profitable and so on. But I still see those same firms working on those matters.
Yeah.
And like I said, some will charge shortfalls and success fees, some won't. But what it has done, I think it's brought forward a better vetting, a better approval stage of shortfalls, because what essentially came later was CPR rule amendments making it mandatory for fee approval of any shortfall or success fee from damages. And we do lots of work in that area, as you know. We help law firms with that. And we also help lots of deputies who are asked to approve shortfalls and additional liabilities. We help give advice on that so they can have peace of mind in making any informed approval of them.
Yes.
But that has brought that to the fore, and I think you've got a really good vetting procedure now.
Yeah.
What results in either court approval or court partial approval or disapproval, and actually for protected parties that's particularly really good. Obviously where a client's got capacity, we won't go into Belsner on this because we'll take up
be
too much
forever.
Time we're here forever, yes. But look, where a client's got capacity, they can agree it with the client, but again, it it I think it's positive because the client has some skin in the game.
Yeah.
Where historically they didn't. They have an interest in the costs that have been spent, and that was always a big wish of Lord Justice Jackson's, clients to have an interest in the litigation.
Yes.
Properly, i.e. if you never was going to pay anything in costs, you've got no interest.
No.
In controlling them. If you're paying something, you've got interest in controlling them.
Absolutely.
And those clients with capacity can obviously agree those fees and have a real interest in them. So I think that's been positive in terms of fee approvals and promoting early conversations and making sure clients have got an interest in,
yeah,
in the costs.
Absolutely.
DBAs. Now, DBAs, there's been lots of law firms doing cases on DBAs, but not as much as Lord Justice Jackson envisaged. Lots of concern around how the DBA regulations were drafted.
Right.
Still lots of concern because despite some campaigning for change, there's not been no change, and the government does not seem to be interested in making any changes.
Mm.
The one good change was through case law. So it was a case of Zaberi versus Lexlaw. And in that case, essentially, the court found that a termination clause in a DBA, despite it not saying it's allowed in the regulations, it's fine, it's equitable.
Yes.
And it's possible to have one. So that was positive because there was a worry that it was effectively a real all or nothing agreement, and if the client terminated, you were left,
yes,
in the dark. But that case is positive and gives lawyers peace of mind. But unless there's another government review, particularly making it absolutely clear that you could have a hybrid DBA, which is hourly rate charging with a success fee.
Yeah.
There is some case law what says you can do that, but there's other judges on that case saying, I'm not sure about it. So it's not crystal clear. It would be very useful if the regulations were amended to make it absolutely clear that you can do that.
Yeah.
So that's DBAs. It's taken off slightly, but not in
to the extent that it was anticipated.
Correct, yeah. Yeah.
It's sort of very interesting, isn't it, how far everything's come, and like you say, it has for the most part worked out very well for the cost profession and for litigation as a whole.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely litigation funding, look, DBAs weren't there pre-2013. Now I've got things, litigation funding's grown and so on, so I think you're going to talk to me later about access to justice, but you know, just initial thoughts now, it looks like it's improved it from where it was pre-2013.
So going back to the present, there's one recommendation that hasn't been implemented yet that was in Sir Rupert Jackson's final report, and that was his position on fixed costs in the fast track litigation.
Yes.
Now, with what was originally supposed to be implemented in April, now October, we have the expansion of fixed recoverable costs. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, well, if you look back in time, I don't know if you were born at this point, which is that fixed costs for the fast track were first recommended by Lord Wolfe.
Yes.
In the last century.
Yes.
And actually, I was definitely at high school at that point when they were recommended.
Well, I'm 98, so yeah. Around that time.
So you were probably just been born a few years earlier. But yeah, so they go back a long time. They've been recommended for a long time. It's amazing that Lord Justice Jackson, so they didn't happen off the back of the Wolfe report and the civil procedural rule reforms, and then they didn't happen after LASPO, and we're now in 2023 and they're due to happen in October.
Yeah,
so it's been a long time coming. So we can't say we're surprised that they're here, because there's been talks about them for a long, long time.
Yes.
But yeah, I think they're going to be implemented in October. Obviously, we've seen the draft rules now.
Yes.
What I'm hearing from my sources is that it's definitely happening. There's going to be no change in direction. Thoughts on it are, look, it's a way of controlling costs on lower value disputes.
Yeah.
And providing the fixed recoverable costs at the right level, and they're at the right level if the court streamlines litigation and controls it properly.
Yes.
Then it can work.
Yes.
But my worry is that the streamlined process won't happen, and it will make those cases quite unprofitable for law firms. I'm not saying law firms won't do them, but suddenly then will there be a reduction in investment of time on those cases? So suddenly clients get access to justice but not the service they would like to expect.
Mm.
But that's difficult for the lawyer to provide an amazing service if the inter-parties fee is not doesn't work.
No, absolutely.
And there's always the answer, which is, well, you could charge the shortfall and a solicitor on client charge. Of course you can. But then that leads into the client's damages.
Yeah.
And so look, in terms of something was recommended a long, long time ago, it's positive that it's here.
Mm.
If it can control costs and the streamlined process is there, I think it's a positive thing for the profession. But the jury's out as to whether the streamlined process will be there.
There's a lot of ifs, ands or buts, isn't there, really, of whether it will be profitable for business. Like you say, will there be a streamlined process?
Yeah.
And it all remains to be seen, I guess, doesn't it?
And I made the observation about being positive, which is, look, if there's a damages claim at the moment for £50,000, it can be easy costs to be end up being more than that, or it's equal to it. So actually, there can be a fixed fee. Well, I don't know, is for £50,000 ends up at £25,000. That's proportionate. It works. It's got to work for the law firm as well as the client, as well as the paying party.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if there's no harmony between those three parties, then it won't work.
Yeah.
So look, we shall see. But look, October will bring lots of challenges.
It will.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting period.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of letters of claim that are going out before then. For the industrial disease matters anyway, before the implementation.
And just on that note, we should mention, so myself and my colleague Dan Murray are running a seminar at our offices in Leeds on the 6th of September, which will all be around the fixed recoverable costs. We're doing it then because it's literally a month before implementation. We'll definitely know what the rules are going to be. We'll definitely have more visibility on practice directions and interpretation and so on. There's still quite a few unknowns in September. I think we'll know.
Be able to give the practical advice that people are looking for.
So look, if you registered for our cost blog, you'll find out about that event and how to sign up. If you're not registered, please do just by googling Clarion cost blog.
Yeah,
find the page and sign up on there. Alternatively, email Eleanor Hunter or Andrew McCauley. If you go on the Clarion website, you'll find us, email us, and we'll add you to the distribution list.
Absolutely, and I'll add that as well to this blog.
Fantastic.
The invite for that fixed cost seminar. So my final question, and I suppose you could say the big question. So Lord Justice Jackson, in his foreword to his final report in December 2009, stated, "In some areas of civil litigation, costs are disproportionate and impede access to justice. I therefore propose a coherent package of interlocking reforms designed to control costs and promote access to justice. Do you think this has been achieved?"
That's like an exam question.
It is very much an exam question.
And I won't answer it like an exam question. I'll try to keep it brief. So just breaking that down, access to justice, which I've already just touched on slightly.
Mm.
In terms of legal aid, and as a practice, we don't do legal aid work. And as a team of cost lawyers, we don't do legal aid cost work.
No.
So it's not an area we're really close to. But my understanding in terms of legal aid, it hasn't promoted access to justice. Fees for lawyers in legal aid work have been squeezed, and clearly I suspect access to justice, without having any stats in front of me, has gone backwards in that area. But for civil and commercial work, I think it's relatively the same. I don't think it's gone backwards. If anything, it's improved slightly. And I say that because I don't think it's changed how CFAs work.
No.
It has clearly in terms of not being able to recover the success fee into parties, but I don't think it's led to a reduction in matters being funded by way of CFAs.
No.
I think PI and Clin Mutneg work still the same. They still do it on CFA. It's just the terms are different.
Yes.
But you're not finding clients saying, I can't access that law firm like I did before because they're not offering CFAs. They still are.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't think it's changed that. DBAs have not taken off, but there is law firms doing them.
Mm.
So it is has helped access justice there because there's another funding mechanism available.
Yes.
And some law firms are using it, but not as many as we predicted. Justice Jackson expected BTE insurance to grow.
Mm.
To my mind, that hasn't grown.
No.
I think it's an area what is still viewed negatively and rarely used.
Yeah.
So I don't think that has increased at all. Third-party funding, I think that's increased.
Yeah.
There's definitely more third-party funders in the market now. The funding code's been positive, so funders can sign up to that code and just create some peace of mind for people who are signing up for cases to be funded by whether third-party funder.
Mm.
So I think third-party funding has increased since last spur, which is positive. So I think it's relative. I wouldn't say, I've got no stats in front of me, I wouldn't say it's, I see any massive change in terms of access to justice. But definitely these extra funding options have at best slightly improved access to justice.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't say it's fundamentally changed it.
No.
And the second part to your question, so controlling costs.
Yes.
Has it controlled costs? My answer to that is yes.
Yeah.
Because I think there's more visibility and transparency on costs now than there ever has been.
The cost budgeting process has a massive impact on the controlling costs now, doesn't it?
Definitely. And that, as we said earlier, pre-2013, potentially an opponent, we'll say potentially most of the time, would get would settle a claim.
Yeah.
And then detailed assessment proceedings would be commenced and they would say, I thought your cost would have been about £50,000. I didn't expect them to be 150.
Yeah.
My client wouldn't have settled.
Yeah.
Had they known the cost were 150. And that doesn't happen now.
Yeah.
Because we've got budgeting. And even in cases where there's no budgeting, I think lawyers are asking now, they're asking questions.
Yeah.
They're saying, look, okay, there's no budgeting, but let us know where you are. Keep, you know, asking questions now and again. So there's visibility. So there's more transparency than ever. There's definitely more accountability.
Yes.
Than there was. And I think as a result of all those things, you've got therefore a tougher approach to costs.
Mm.
Because, as you know, if there's a budget and you exceed it, unless you've got good reason,
yeah,
it's tough to get paid it.
Yeah, so absolutely.
More accountability, more tougher approach.
And we've, of course, got the mandatory budget variation now.
Yes.
Another recent development, or fairly recent anyway, to control costs.
Yeah.
And that's had a massive impact as well, because now you've not just got the good reason, you've got the budget variation, so you should be constantly monitoring your costs, which I know we carry out for quite a few clients.
Correct.
To ensure that we are within budget, and if they're not within budget, we make the variation. So you're controlling costs by keeping them under constant review, or you should be doing.
Correct. And going back into the strong client relationship, the inter-parties requirements, the byproduct of that is you naturally talk to your client more about costs.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic and helps you satisfy your obligations under the SRA Code of Conduct. As well as satisfying your obligations into parties to your opponent. So look, I think it has helped to control costs, more transparency, more accountability than ever. And just touching again, we've got the fixed cost coming in October.
Yeah.
Providing the court system is streamlined, then that should be a fair way of controlling costs for disputes under £100,000.
Absolutely.
But we shall see.
We shall indeed. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Andrew, for joining me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.